ways of directly serving him in pure devotional service, in Ananya Bhakti, and how to become an Ananya Bhakta. So, and how he reciprocates with such a pure devotee. So Krishna will now continue to reveal this Rajaguya, Rajavidya, and provide more details of his opulence, of his opulences, since Krishna is very eager to hear more. In chapter 7 and onwards, it was explained Bhakti Tattva along with the Lord's Aishwarya feature. That same Bhakti Tattva is also known as Bhagavat Tattva or Bhagavat Vibhuti, is described in this 10th chapter along with its confidential meaning. So it's been explained from chapter 7 onwards that the Lord's Aishwarya features, the Lord's Aishwarya feature causes knowledge. That knowledge arises in the heart of the sadhaka, and that clearly reveals the Lord as the supreme object of love, the supreme worshipable object. So knowledge of this same Aishwarya is now given in detail for the pleasure of those with devotion. So basically Krishna is speaking the same thing but in more detail. Because Arjuna is very eager to hear, so he's explaining further. Yeah, you could say out of love. Of course, everything he does is out of love. And for his love for his devotee, Arjuna. And here it says, Yatte ham priyamanaya. Because you're very dear to me, therefore I'm explaining to you more my Aishwaryas, my vibhutis. So the, as I just said, the knowledge of the Lord's vibhutis, or his aishvaryas, it causes knowledge to rise in the heart of the sadhaka. That is, the Lord is the supreme worshipable object. So for those who have devotion, now the Lord's going into more detail. And Arjuna has devotion, so he's explaining more with some more, you know, more depth in the more detail. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Bhuya Eva Mahabaho Shrino Me Paramam Bachaha Yate Ham Priyamaraya Bhakshyami Hitakam Yaya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, listen again, O mighty armed Arjuna, because you are my dear friend. For your benefit I shall speak to you further, giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained. So Krishna says, Bhuya Eva Mahabaho, now I will explain again this Raja Vidya, Raja Guya, that you are Mahabaho, you have performed many great activities with your mighty arms. So now I expect that you will show some strength of intelligence as well. And he says, although you already know them, you'll still become surprised. This will increase your devotion, Arjuna. You are hearing like nectar, so I'll make you hear more nectar. Or make you drink more nectar. So Shrinume, he says, now listen. Krishna says this to ensure that Arjuna will hear with rapt attention. And that it will, so that it will be fully retained. And he says, paramam vachaha, that this is superior to what I was speaking before. This is superior knowledge than what was given in chapter 9. Yateham priyamanaya. This is meant for those who are little advanced, those who can't accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead will relish this chapter 10. And he says, Vakshyami Hitakamya, I'm speaking this for your benefit.
What is that? Those who are not advanced, they will relish this knowledge.
Those who are a little advanced. More advanced than the people who just understand the Parameshwar or Paramatma, or they have some advancement.
This, what is superior to 9th chapter, but it's called most confidential knowledge.
Well, it gives more detail about that most confidential knowledge. Especially in the middle, in the Chatur Shloki verses.
This is the continuation of most confidential.
Yeah, Bhuya Eva. So I'm telling you again, this Raja Vidya. It indirectly indicates he's speaking this Raja Vidya again. Prabhupada says, previously, beginning with the 7th chapter, the Lord has already explained his different energies and how they're acting. Now, in this chapter, he explains his specific opulences to Arjuna. In the previous chapter, he has clearly explained his different energies to establish devotion in firm conviction. Again, in this chapter, he tells Arjuna about his manifestations and various opulences. And then he says, Prabhupada says, the more one hears about the Supreme Lord, the more his opulence, his bhakti becomes fixed. Arjuna is very anxious to hear more, so Krishna describes more to him. So one might wonder that how does knowing Krishna's opulences increase devotion? Well, on this basic level of bhakti tattva or Bhagavad Vibhuti, then it does actually increase one's devotion. That's like if you had a friend, like from your school days, and then suddenly you found out that he's a billionaire, you know, that he has like hundreds of millions of dollars, right? And then that would excite your, or spark more of your relationship with this person. Then you think, oh, he's so wonderful, he's so powerful. I didn't know he had that much opulence. You already had a friendship with him. Now you suddenly realize that someone tells you, didn't you know? He's from the wealthy Birla or Tata family. He's like cousins with them. He's got hundreds of millions of dollars. Wow. didn't know that. My friend has hundreds of millions of dollars. Wow, he's really great. And he's my friend. You know, you would be impressed. You know. So he snaps his fingers and he order, you know, 20 trucks to come and, you know, the newest cars and, right, he can do anything. He's powerful. And that's... But to understand fully all of Krishna's opulences is not so easy. That comes only from bhakti. So now Krishna begins to explain this in the next few verses.
Nami vidu suragana prabhavam maharshayah aham adhi devanam maharshinam cha sarvashah. Neither hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences. For in every respect, I am the source of the demigods and sages. Your book says, Na me vidu, in the Roman. Yeah? Mine says, Ne me vidu. Ne me. That's Na me. The Roman is wrong, but the Sanskrit is correct. Maybe you can tell that to the BBT men. Thanks. So, Name Vidu, Suragana. So the group of the demigods, the Suragana, they don't understand my opulences. They don't understand fully who I am. About what? Prabhavam. About my appearance, my birth in this world. Prabhavam. And someone may say that, oh, well, of course, the demigods cannot understand because they're attached to sense enjoyment. But surely the rishis, they must know. And Krishna says, no, namaharshaya. That the maharishis also do not understand what is my birth, my opulences, my activities, and appearance in this world. Why cannot the rishis also understand? Aham adhiri devanam maharshinam. Because I am the source of both the devas and the maharishis. And just as a son cannot understand about the birth of his father unless his father reveals that to him, so similarly, the devas and the rishis, they cannot understand about Krishna's appearance, his birth in this world, until Krishna actually reveals that to them because of their devotion and surrender. So it's not just by their knowledge and their purity and their universal status and their austerities and so forth that they understand about Krishna. Because those things of themselves are to do with sattva gun and karma and intelligence, as we see. That you cannot understand God with your own intelligence. Atashi Krishna Namadi Nabhavat Gremindre. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, this tattva can be understood only by my special mercy, not by any other means. Therefore the Lord speaks this verse.
Ajamanadim cha vetti loka maheshwaram asammudha samardyeshu sarva papaye pramuchyate.
He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme lord of all the worlds. He only, undiluted among men, is free from all sins. So in the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he explains Krishna speaking with Arjuna. And Arjuna says, "You are the supreme Brahman, all-pervading in space and time, and now you have taken this form. Why do you say that the sages don't know you?" So then Krishna says, "Yo mam ajam," and he points to his finger, to his chest with his forefinger. "Yo mam ajam anadam cha veti lok maheshwaram." Only those who know me as unborn and beginningless, he is only such a person as undiluted among men. And he knows me in truth. And Arjuna says, "But Brahma is also Aja." And Krishna says, "Yes, but I am also Anadi, without beginning. But Brahma is not like that." And Arjuna says, "Yes, some know you as Parameshwar, the Supreme Controller." And Krishna says, "Yes, but those who know me as Aja, unborn, eternally, and still taking birth from Vasudeva, these people actually know me." And Arjuna says, "You appear in this world, although you have no birth, that even the scholars are bewildered and confused about this." And Krishna explains that, "Yes, when I was a little boy in Braj, my mama used to tie me with a kinkini belt, with small bells around the waist, and that showed that I was limited. But at the same time, she couldn't tie me with all of those ropes, and that showed that I was unlimited. So this is beyond reason, beyond logic. So similarly, I am born in this world from the house of Vasudeva, but still I am unborn. This is beyond logic." That's why the scholars and the pundits, they cannot understand. So Prabhupada writes that one should not try to understand Krishna as a human being. As stated previously, only a foolish person thinks him to be a human being. This is again expressed here in a different way. Right? You remember? Avajananti manushim tanam asham. This is again expressed here in a different way. A man who is not foolish, who is intelligent enough to understand the constitutional position of the Godhead, is always free from all sinful reactions. Krishna says, "Now more surprises. I am Loka Maheshwar, and I am controlling your horses, and you are controlling me." Who can understand this? This is beyond logic. This type of knowledge only rare souls achieve. And Prabhupada says in his first paragraph, out of those who are actually trying to understand their spiritual situation, one who can come to the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the proprietor of everything, the unborn, is the most successful spiritually realized person. In that stage only, when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position, can one be completely free from all sinful reaction. Sarva papai pramuchate. And Prabhupada mentions in the end of his commentary that these directions are given in the Shastras or from the bona fide spiritual master. that because the spiritual master is a representative of the Lord, his direction is directly the direction of the Supreme Lord. The guru, sadhu, and shastras direct in the same way. There is no contradiction in these sources, these three sources. All actions done under such direction are free from the reactions of pious or impious acts in this world. The transcendental attitude of the devotee in the performance of activities is actually that of renunciation. That is called sannyas. As stated in the first verse of the sixth chapter of the Gita, one who acts as a matter of duty because he has been ordered to do so by the Lord and who does not seek shelter in the fruits of his activities is a true renouncer. Anyone acting under the direction of the Supreme Lord is actually a sannyasi and a yogi, and not the man who simply has taken the dress of the sannyasi or pseudo-yogi. Verses.
Ahimsa samatha tushtis tapo danam yasho yashaha bhavanti bhava bhutanam matta eva pritak vidaha.
Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy, all these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. Prabhupada writes, the different qualities of living entities, be they good or bad, are all created by Krishna, and they are described here. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that the knowers of Shastra cannot understand the truth about me by their own intelligence, because it's born of Satvagun, which is within my Maya Shakti. It has no individual qualification to understand my tattva, which is gunatita, this intelligence. Krishna is above the modes, and the intelligence is in the mode of goodness, buddhi. So therefore, just with one's intelligence, one cannot understand Krishna. One's intelligence must be surcharged by the mercy of Krishna in devotion. And only then one can understand. So, particularly the first three items are mentioned again and again. Buddhir, Jnana, Masamoha. That these three can be helpful in understanding Krishna. They're needed, but they are insufficient to know me, he says. They're like indirect causes. But alone, they cannot bring one to know me. I cannot be known by these alone. So the first line, the first seven, are all in the mode of goodness, or all from the mode of goodness. And so is sukha. But dukkha is in the mode of ignorance. And bhaya, fear, is also from ignorance, tamas. And fearlessness, if it's from knowledge, then it's sattvic. But if it's not from knowledge, then it's rajasic. Maybe like a kshatriya being fearless in the battle. Maybe just his nature of passion. Then ahimsa, samatha, they're also sattvic. Non-violence and equanimity. Satisfaction, tushti, is sattvic if it's free from illusion. But if it's not, then it's rajasic. Because there's a lot of people that are satisfied in the mode of passion, too. Then tapodana, austerities, and charity are sattvic if they are free from illusion and free from the sense of doership. And fame and infamy are understood in the same way. So all of these come from the Supreme Lord. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, they have all come from my Maya Shakti. But since Shakti and Shaktiman are non-different, it should be understood that they are created by me alone. Now Prabhupada goes to great lengths in his commentary to explain each and every one of these. But we won't go through that now because it's very time consuming. But you can read that. It's interesting. Under a sammoha, there's an interesting statement. Prabhupada says, nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. An important statement about the process of receiving knowledge and becoming free from doubt. As we said before, doubt is a function of the intelligence. So it's healthy to have some doubts to a certain extent, within reason. But when someone tells you something, like a teacher, then you should first try to understand what he's saying, how it's true. And then later, you should try to understand the doubts that you have in your mind. First, at least, try to accept that this is possible, that this is true. And how is it true? How could it be true? And then later, when the doubts come up, then you can ask questions about that. Not that when some information is given, then immediately you try to see, what is the fault in that? How is that wrong? That is not the right way to get the knowledge. First you have to accept how it's correct. And then if you try to fit it into your paradigm, then there may be some qualifying statements or some additional information needed to put that into your, you know, your hard drive. Because the absolute truth is like a huge, you know, multifaceted creature. You know, it has many facets and many sides. And it's not so easy to just grasp all of those multifaceted aspects. You know? You may get one piece here, and maybe one from here, and another from here. But that alone, you may think that you know everything just from that, but you don't. There's quite a bit left, right? So it takes a long time to approach the absolute truth in any way, through scriptures, through discussion, through your personal experience, to hearing from others' experiences. So all of this will add to your full understanding of the absolute truth. Then you'll also see that there's everything put together. Then you have a complete picture. Now at the end of the commentary here, Prabhupada writes, although these qualities are manifest throughout the universe in human society and in the society of the demigods. All these qualities are manifest throughout the universe in human society and in the society of the demigods. There are many forms of humanity on other planets, and these qualities are there. Now, for one who wants to advance in Krishna consciousness, Krishna creates all these qualities, but the person develops them himself from within. One who engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord develops all the good qualities as arranged by the Supreme Lord. Of whatever we find, good or bad, the origin is Krishna. Nothing can manifest itself in this world which is not in Krishna. That is knowledge. Although we know that things are differently situated, we should realize that everything flows from Krishna. So the demigods, they, and the rishis, certainly they have many of these sattvic qualities, but still they cannot understand Krishna. Maybe a little part of it. Now there's a part in the Bhagavatam which is very interesting. Oh, maybe we'll read it after this verse. It's very similar to the section of the Gita. Let's just read text 6 first. Maharshaya sapta purve chatvaro manavastata madbhava manasa jata yesham loka ima prajaha. The 7 great sages, and before them the 4 other great sages, and the manus come from me, born from my mind, and all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. So when Krishna says Madbhava Manasa Jata, he means he's talking about Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is born from the Lord's desire, and from Brahma comes all of these rishis, manus, and sages. So that's what he commentators mention. First you have the I believe Narada comes first, isn't it? Or the four Kumaras come first, and then the Saptarishis. Yeah. Saptarishis are given in the 11th canto, 14th chapter, text 5. Atri, Angira, Pulaha, Pulastya, Kratu, Marichi, and Brigu. There's different lists. Sometimes it's listed Vashishtha, but this is the one that I saw. Because also they change every so many millennium. Well, that's my reference there. It says these are the Saptarishis. That's in the 11th canto. Sometimes it's described the 9 sages, and they may include Vashishta and some others. Angira. Well, we said Angira. There's a few other sages, original sages. Prabhupada mentions Lord Brahma also. The Lord is giving a genealogical synopsis of the universal population. Brahma is the original creature born out of the energy of the Supreme Lord, who is known as Hiranyagarbha. And from Brahma, all the 7 great sages, and before them, the other great sages, Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatan, and Sanat Kumar, and the Manus. All these 25 great sages are known as the patriarchs, or Prajapatis, of the living entities all over the universe. So everyone in the universe is born from these 25 patriarchs. So Brahma underwent penance for 1,000 years and then realized how to create. Then from Brahma came these 4 Kumars, then Rudra, then the Saptarishis, and then all the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas were appearing like this. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains here that after explaining those with such attributes are incapable of knowing his tattva, the Lord explains the reality of their deficiencies. In other words, these qualities come from Krishna alone. Now in the Bhagavatam, Canto, 29th chapter, verse number 40, beginning from verse 42, and reading maybe three or four verses. The most powerful Lord Brahma, the father of all progenitors, Lord Shiva, Manu, Daksha, and the other rulers of mankind, the four saintly first-class brahmacharis headed by Sanaka and Sanatana, the great sages Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulasya, Pulaha, Kratu, Bhrigu, and Vasishta, and my humble self, Narada, are all stalwart brahmanas who can speak authoritatively on Vedic literature. We are very powerful because of austerities, meditation, and education. Nonetheless, even after inquiring about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom we always see, we do not know perfectly about him. So, in the commentary, as mentioned, all the above great personalities are not only powerful, being cognizant of past, present, and future, but are also devotees. Still, in spite of their great education and knowledge, and despite their meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, they cannot actually understand the perfection of the living entity's relationship with Lord Vishnu. This means that these personalities are still limited as far as their knowledge of the unlimited is concerned. The conclusion is that simply by advancing one's knowledge, one cannot be accepted as an expert in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord can be understood not by advanced knowledge, but by pure devotional service, as confirmed in the Gita, Bhaktya Mam Abhijananti Yavanyas Jasme Tattvata. Next verse says, despite the cultivation of Vedic knowledge, which is unlimited, and the worship of different demigods by the symptoms of Vedic mantras, demigod worship does not help one to understand the Supreme Powerful Personality of Godhead. But when a person is fully engaged in devotional service, he is favored by the Lord, who bestows his causeless mercy. At such a time, the awakened devotee gives up all material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. So that verse 42, 43, and 44 basically say the same thing as these few verses here in the Bhagavad Gita, and even gives the same persons, the four Kumars, the Saptarishis, and the Manus. And this is Narada speaking to King Prachinibarhi. He says, we're very powerful, but still we can, and we saw the Lord, but still we can't understand him. So here we see some evidence that Krishna's statement is true. It's confirmed by his devotee Narada. And I should say, Baladeva Vidyabhushan has written that just as these qualities come from me, these persons also come from me. These 25 created all progeny. They are born from Brahma, and he was born by my desire. They meditate on me, and by my potency, they gain knowledge. So he said, just as these qualities come from me, these 25 people also come from me. They meditate on me, and by my potency, they obtain knowledge. Okay. Now, text 7.
He's
saying both. But what's your question, though?
I'm just asking that he's saying that the powerful people that come from me, this is also under the populace. The powerful people, they are still, they don't understand me.
Well, Narada himself said that they're powerful due to their austerities and their meditation and their knowledge. So Krishna gives them knowledge. They gain knowledge, but unless they do bhakti, they won't get full knowledge. Because the first one, buddhi, also comes from Krishna, and it's awarded by Krishna to even the sages and the demigods. But that knowledge is not enough. It only goes up to a certain level. To get the high, nirgun gyan, divya gyan, then one has to do bhakti. Then Krishna gives that special realization to... Not because they may understand that he's supreme, but they don't understand how does he appear in this world like a child, and why does he play like that, and right? Why is he playing with these young boys and the, you know, crawling around on the ground? He's standing there with his yogurt and fruit in his hand, and in his left hand, he's not following the Vedic principles. Brahma steals his cows away, and this. So they know something about it, but they, not full knowledge is there. Etam vibhutam yogam cha mama yogiti tatpatah so vikalpena yogena yujate natrasunshaya. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So here the word vibhuti and yogam here means mystic power. But avikalpena yogina means ananya bhakti, a kind of pure devotion. So this knowledge increases devotion. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, I am achieved by pure devotion. Only my pure devotees who have strong faith in my statements become aware of my tattva by my mercy. Therefore Krishna speaks this verse. So Prabhupada writes in the first paragraph, if one knows factually how God is great, then naturally he becomes a surrendered soul and engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord. When one factually knows the opulences of the Supreme, there is no alternative but to surrender to him. And in the last two sentences, Prabhupada writes, all this particular knowledge is required in order to increase one's interest in the loving devotional service of the Lord. One should not neglect to understand fully. Gives the impetus for Arjuna's request in verse 16. For Krishna to describe his vibhutis in more detail. Because once he says that if you're really convinced and you know these vibhutis, right, in truth, then you will engage in my pure devotional service. So then Arjuna wants to know these vibhutis more specifically. Okay, so that's the first section of this chapter 10. And it's called Krishna is the Origin of Everything. So now the next section is the Chatur Shloka. It's four verses. And these are the essence of the Gita, or the seed verses. So, will it be? Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante maam buddha bhava samanvitaha.
I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments here that in my form as the Supersoul, I supervise all within this material world. From me, all avatars come, like Narada, and they preach the needs and goals of mankind, such as devotional service and jnana and karma yoga. So here, in this, before Krishna begins describing his relationship with his devotees, he first describes his opulence. One line, the first line, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. That I am the seed or the source of everything, and everything emanates from me. I mean, that is one sutra which describes all his opulences. And so in the commentary, Prabhupada and the other acharyas, they're quoting from the Shrutis to establish that Krishna is indeed the source of everything. He is the Supreme Lord. Like from the Gopal Tapani, Prabhupada quotes, Yo Brahmanam Vidadati Purvam Yo Vaivarangstra Gapayati Sma Krishna. It was Krishna who in the beginning instructed Brahma, and he disseminated the Vedic knowledge in the past. And the Narayana Upanishad, there's Narayanat Brahma Jayate, Narayanat Prajapati Prajayante, Narayanat Indra Jayate, Narayanat Ashto Vasavo Jayante, the Vasus. Narayana Ekadasha Rudra Jayante, the 11 Rudras. Narayana Dvadasha Ditya Jayante. Right? So all of these persons come from Narayana. Right? That is in the fifth, the Panchami, right? The appellative case. From Narayana comes or is born. Right, all these persons, and in the Narayana Upanishad, also the famous Brahmanyo Devaki Putra, the son of Devaki is the supreme Brahman, and then also it's mentioned Eko Vai Narayana Asid Na Brahma Na Ishano Na Punagni Samoneme. In the beginning of the creation, there was only the supreme Lord Narayana. There was no Brahma, Shiva, moon, stars, in the sky, no sun. No fire. So Baladeva Dibhushan says one should understand all this by the association of a bona fide guru and thus attain bhava, Buddha bhava samanvitaha. So knowing the greatness of Krishna inspires one to surrender to Krishna. And then the surrender to Krishna will bring about bhava, or real bhakti, ecstatic devotion to Krishna. So knowing Krishna leads to love of Krishna. So Krishna is the source of everything, the whole universe. And so if Krishna is the source of everything and you love Krishna, then you love everything in the whole universe. So if you love the Father, you love the brothers. If you love the body, you'll also love the fingers. Right? So one who loves Krishna, he loves everyone. So how Krishna said that those who know this perfectly, they engage in my devotional service and they worship me with all their hearts. So how do they worship me with all their hearts? That's described in the next verse. Machita madgata prana hodayanta parasparam atayantas chamam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service.
and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. For Machitta, they're always thinking about Krishna in their minds. Especially during the perfected stage, they're remembering Krishna within their minds. By remembering their perfected state, their sarup, when they come to sarup, sarup city. But sadhakas, they're also thinking about Krishna, hearing and chanting, though it's meditating on Krishna. And madgata prana means that this hearing and remembering about Krishna has become their life, their very life, like their food. They can't live without it. Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, just like a fish cannot live outside of the water. So my devotees have to always be hearing and chanting about me. Otherwise they'll die. And Prabhupada mentions that in his commentary too. At the end of the second paragraph. And Bodhayanta means that they enlighten one another about the sarup and tattva of bhakti with great affection. They contribute to one another's spiritual progress. So they like to help each other to advance further by discussing the nature and the truth of bhakti. And kattayantas chamam nityam. And they're always hearing Krishna katha. And here Krishna says, mam, I am the great ocean of the sweetest rup, gun, and lila. And that's why they can swim eternally in that huge ocean, hearing and chanting. Again, like a fish swimming in the ocean. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says, in this way, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam are superior to all other processes of bhakti. Ananya bhaktas only attain satisfaction and bliss by performing this type of bhakti. This is the secret. They get satisfaction during their sadhana stage as they perform unobstructed bhajan. And during the sadhya stage, they enjoy with Krishna within their minds by remembering their perfect state. And tushanti cha ramanti cha, they attain satisfaction and bliss by doing these. That's the result. So, ramanti indicates conjugal love. Baladeva Vidyabhushan mentions, just like a young man takes great pleasure in the beauty of a young girl, so my devotees take pleasure in hearing and chanting about me. So Tushanti therefore represents the other rasas, Vatsalya, Sakya, and Dasya. Prabhupada mentions at the end of his commentary, just as a young boy and girl take pleasure in association. So that's right from Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary. So Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and how the devotees respond to him is given in this verse, and now how Krishna reciprocates with them is given in the next verse. So this is the essence of bhakti, because bhakti means the relationship between Krishna and his devotee. The devotees are always hankering to hear about Krishna, they're thinking about Krishna, they're helping one another in their devotional service, and they get great bliss. And when Krishna sees this, then he feels also very satisfied, and he reciprocates with that devotee. Tesham sadata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam bhayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So here we have the famous term Buddha Yoga that we saw in chapter 2. Right? So here you have the full-blown lotus of Buddha Yoga, whereas in chapter 2 you have like a bud. Right? Here it's a full-blown lotus of this Buddha Yoga. So Buddha Yoga is kind of like a flower. It expands and then it can contract. So here, the Buddha Yoga means direct inspiration in the heart. The inspiration of loving relationship with the Lord. And Vishwanath Chakravarti describes that Arjuna says, "You say they are pleased by devotion, but how do they realize you directly? And from whom do they learn this process?" Krishna answers, "I give such people Buddha Yoga, Arjuna, the inspiration in their hearts. This doesn't come from one's own efforts or from anyone else. It comes only from me. They come into direct association with me. Only such loving bhaktas are qualified to receive it." And Prabhupada writes in his second and third paragraphs, "When a person knows the goal of life but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he's acting in jnana yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he's acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life." So we have a very nice overview of the yogas there. Now Prabhupada continues, "A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization. But still, if he's not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him." So we see that we have the usual scenario where you have a guru, and the guru is there, and he's instructing you in the science of bhakti from the shastras. You're getting training. You're in an organization, you're with other devotees, and in this way you study the shastras, you hear from the guru, and you progress. But there may be some obstacles on the usual scenario. Maybe the guru never comes, that you just took diksha and he passed away. Or maybe he lives on the other side of the world, or he has so many disciples that, you know, he's too busy, whatever. Or maybe the devotee is not intelligent enough to understand the philosophy just with his own power. Or maybe the devotee is blind or deaf. maybe he can't read or hear the classes or something like that. There may be some kind of material obstacle in the way. So in that case, Krishna from within the heart gives the knowledge, the Buddha Yoga, if the devotee is sincere and if he's engaged in devotional activities and has some faith and he does some work for Krishna with love. So then Krishna overrides all of the usual procedures and goes straight to the heart and just, you know, turns on the light, which is also described in the next verse. But it's interesting that, you know, we have like our usual procedure, and actually the devotees who do have enough intelligence and who are in the usual situation, then they should apply their intelligence and their energies to understand Krishna by studying the shastras, by hearing from the sadhus and the guru, and contemplating the philosophy and amongst each other. It's not that we should be lazy and then just think, oh, Krishna will enlighten me because I'm a devotee. Right? We have to endeavor on the usual path. But if there is some obstacle on that usual path, then, and the person's sincere, then Krishna will supersede all of these usual procedures, and he will turn on the light within, because he's the Chaitanya Guru. And if the person's sincere, then Krishna doesn't care if the person's intelligent enough, or if maybe he has some other obstruction, then he will enlighten the person from within the heart, because he gives that. Dadami buddhi yogam tam enamam upayantite. So, now, this verse says that the Lord directly enlightens someone in the heart. So, sometimes people claim that God has spoken to me, and he has enlightened me. He has told me, you know, of, he has revealed himself to me, and so forth. So, what would you say to that kind of person, right? Okay, now there's another kind of person. He says that God speaks you to directly, so you don't need a guru for guidance, because Krishna says directly he inspires, gives the Buddha Yoga in the heart. So how would you preach to that type of person? You have like two kinds of people. One person just says, God has spoken to me directly, right? Another person says, yes, God can speak to you directly, therefore you don't need a guru. You just can get enlightenment on your own. So just maybe in the small groups, three or four devotees, you just come up with some answer to this. How would you preach to this kind of person? And just write it down, and then we'll compare our notes amongst each other. You can just make a comment on one or both of those, since they're very similar. So, what would you say to this kind of person? Let's hear what you would say. Can have one spokesman from each group. Get your best arguments. Yeah.
So the person who says that God spoke to me, so he can say that, what did God speak to you?
Yeah, well, then you may be standing there for, you know, 2 hours listening to his whole thing.
What if he says you can confirm it with Guru Sadhu and Shastra?
Right, okay. And in other words, you listen and then you say, well, wait a minute, that's not in the Shastra, that's not in the Shastra. But suppose he's telling things from the Shastra. Huh? Then you follow him, right? Okay. What else would you, what would you say? Good. Then you can give some Shastric evidence, right? From the Kali Santana or Upanishad, right? What else? But what about the verse itself? Right?
It is better that he speaks or gives understanding to those who are constantly devoted to serving and love.
Right, so you ask the person, how are you constantly devoted to God? Tell me, what do you do? What do you, when, you know, what, when, from when you wake up in the morning to when you're going to sleep, how much are you devoted to God? If they wake up in the morning and smoke a cigarette and then, you know, watch the TV, eat some boga, and then go to the work, the office, right? Then it's, that's, where's the devotion, right? So Krishna said, the only these kind of people, I give them the knowledge. So Prabhupada mentioned this a few times, right? So because nowadays everyone says, yes, God spoke to me, but nobody's actually devoted their life, you know. In other words, you can say that, you know, the way you're living is not different from the people who don't believe in God. So how are you devoted to God? Just in your heart? That's not good enough. You have to actually devote all of your body, mind, and words, and intelligence, and, you know, Lakshmi, everything has to be engaged. Now, what about the person who says, I don't need a guru? What do you say? Yeah. Because God speaks to you in your heart. Why do you need a guru? He's just a man. What? Then you should... I heard the first part. Okay, spiritual master told you that you are a foolish person, you cannot understand, and you take the mantra. Okay. All right. That's one approach. Yes?
God spoke to you directly. God is directly telling that the spiritual master.
Right. Good. Okay, what else? Another something? Yes?
God has already spoken to me, God has already given the scriptures, God has spoken to me and the other creatures. So still we need a spiritual master to access that.
To understand that. Right, it's not academic knowledge, it's a kind of mystic knowledge which is revealed to you in the heart by surrender to the Guru. Yes?
God himself acts as a spiritual master.
Yes, right. And
God reveals or enlightens from within only to those who are completely devoted to Him with love.
Right.
And that's not possible without accepting to a bona fide.
Yasya Devi Tata Bhakti Yata Devi Tata Guru. He reveals that Vedic knowledge to those who have faith in the Guru, also not just in Him. So many verses are there. So we should be. Have some idea about these things, so that we can explain. Another thing, Krishna describes that devotees enjoy discussing amongst themselves about Him. So now you can pair up with the person sitting next to you and share some experience. When you felt some special reciprocation with another devotee, any devotee, Krishna says how the devotees, they share, they get bliss from discussing about Him. So try to remember some experience you had with a devotee, some special experience you had with a devotee when you got some special revelation or some reciprocation when you were sharing with another devotee. But it could be any other devotee from another place, or maybe a sannyasi or a guru, or maybe just your god brother or someone in the temple, any guru, any devotee. Okay?
Tesham Ivanukam Partam Aham Gyanajam Tamaha Nashayami Atma Bhavasto Gyanadipena Bhasvata.
To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So one might wonder that since the jiva has been covered since time immemorial, so is he actually able to get true inspiration, knowledge, and realization? So here Krishna answers that. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, speaking as Krishna, I become Atma Bhavasta, like a bee inside the whirl of a lotus. I become situated in their bhava. In my transcendental form, I reveal my qualities. And with the shining lamp of knowledge of those qualities, I destroy the darkness of ignorance, of anadi karma, which obstructs true knowledge. And that ignorance, darkness of ignorance, also manifests as hankering for other things, for things other than me. So Krishna becomes like a bee. And the devotee's heart is like a lotus flower. Krishna, bzzz, he enters into the lotus flower of the devotee's heart, and he gives inspiration, direct inspiration in the heart, expanding the love in the devotee's heart, expanding the realization in the devotee's heart. So, this gift of transcendental knowledge that removes ignorance is how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees' loving service. This is how Krishna reciprocates with his devotee. And Prabhupada explains this in the, what is it, third paragraph. The end of the third paragraph. Man can go on speculating for several millions of years. And if he is not devoted, if he is not a lover of the Supreme Truth, he will never understand Krishna. Only by devotional service is the Supreme Truth Krishna pleased, and by his inconceivable energy he can reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotee. The pure devotee always has Krishna within his heart. And with the presence of Krishna, who is just like the sun, the darkness of ignorance is at once dissipated. This is the special mercy rendered to the pure devotee by Krishna. And then at the end of the second, or the next paragraph, the pure devotee does not have to worry about the material necessities of life. He need not be anxious, because when he removes the darkness from his heart, everything is provided automatically by the Supreme Lord, who is pleased by the loving devotional service of the devotee. This is the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. By studying Bhagavad Gita, one can become a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord and engage himself in pure devotional service. As the Lord takes charge, one becomes completely free from all kinds of materialistic endeavors. So these four verses of the essence of the Gita, they remove the distress of the living entity and they grant him peace. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments on this verse. Krishna says, the devotees need not endeavor themselves. No, not at all. To show them special mercy, I bestow upon them, but not any other yogis, the Deepa of Gyan, the special lamp of knowledge. In other words, they don't have to worry about how to get my mercy, because I personally endeavor to give it to them. I am Atma Bhavastha, situated within their intelligence, because the knowledge that I give them can be revealed only by me. It is not something in sattva-gun. And it is even distinct from the usual transcendental knowledge arising from devotional service. Within this lamp of knowledge, I destroy their ignorance. Because I personally destroy their ignorance, why should they have to endeavor? According to my own words, to those who always worship me with devotion, I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. I accept as my personal burden to supply all their necessities, both material and spiritual. So that's Baladeva Vibhushan. So it seems that Krishna becomes somewhat assertive in his relationship. The devotees don't have to chase after Krishna begging for enlightenment, but rather Krishna is like a bumblebee and he buzzes right into the heart of the devotee and enlightens him. And he provides all the spiritual necessities for the sincere devotee. Right, you have some question about this? First, in the first paragraph? Okay.
There are very, very learned scholars who have put forward the philosophy of devotion. But even if a devotee does not take advantage of their literatures or all of his spiritual masters, if he is sincere in his devotional service, he is held by Krishna himself within his heart. My question is that Rupa says that if he is sincere in devotional service, so if he is sincere, then he should take advantage of literature given by his spiritual master. So what does Rupa mean here?
Well, it means that if he, like in the previous commentary, that's how I understand. In other words, just like Prabhupada initiated me, and then, you know, like 9 months later, he left the planet. But if the guru, okay, the guru is not personally present that you can associate with him, or if he leaves the planet like right after you meet him, then that means that you can't take advantage of your spiritual master. That means the literatures of the Bhakti Shastri. Yeah, well, maybe he can't read. Everything that maybe he can't read. Maybe he's blind. Or maybe he can see, but he just can't read. And it was just like that South Indian Brahmin in Sri Rangam. Right? He couldn't take advantage of the literatures. But his guru told him to study the Gita. But he couldn't. But if he's sincere, then Krishna helped him within his heart. That's the point. It's not that the person's sincere, but he doesn't give a damn about his guru and about the Shastra. That's not the meaning of the statement here. It means that he it's not like he does not, he cannot take advantage. That would be maybe, I don't know, that's, I'll say, more close to the meaning. He's not able to take advantage of the guru and of the Shastras. Okay? Huh? Ananya Bhaktas. Maybe on different levels, but the Ananya Bhaktas should be there. I mean, you can take it on different levels, but it has to be Ananya Bhakti. You know, this. That Madhchitta, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that in this way, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam are the best processes of bhakti, better than all other processes. And the devotees, they get satisfaction particularly from those, and so on and so forth. He says, but this says these refer to Raganuga bhakti only in his commentary. It's described on that level.
Pure devotee,
They're doing ananya bhakti. It means they're pure. Yeah, I would say. But like this, you know, the Lord will reciprocate proportionate to his purity. But he'll still reciprocate with someone who has no other motive other than just pleasing him, Guru and Krishna. He's not desiring swarga, or he's not worshipping demigods, he's not trying to obtain kingdom or wealth, he's not mixing in jnana, karma, or yoga in his bhakti. He's doing ananya bhakti. But he may be a madhyam bhakta, madhyam adhikari, anishta, say, something like that. So Krishna will proportionally enlighten him within his heart. And later when it comes to asakti and bhava, then more will come. That's natural. As the devotee as the ananya bhakti advances, then Krishna will give him more and more realization and more nectar and, yeah, you know, like this. More and more knowledge and realization will come. As we said, those who are following the acharya, who's a pure devotee in the teachings, then he's also a pure devotee. Just a matter of time. Like the mango on the tree. If it stays there, it'll become ripe. You know, pure mango. So we're in the tree of pure devotion. If we just stay here, then it's just a matter of time. So we can say that we're all pure devotees. We're on the path of pure devotion. We all may at all, everyone's at a different stage, but we're all on the same path. Okay. Shall we just zip through the next section? About 6 or 7 verses? Arjuna vacha param brahma param dhamma pavitram paramam bhavan purusham shashvatam divyam tari devam ajam vibhum ahustvam rishaya sarve devarshir nararastata asito devalo vyasa svayam chaiva bravishime. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa confirm this truth about you, and now you yourself are declaring it to me. So now Arjuna speaks after a long time. He hasn't said anything since the 8th chapter, verse 1. So he's been listening very carefully to Krishna, who's describing his bhakti tattva and his vibhutis. And he says that you are the supreme Brahman, and you are the supreme abode, the supreme pure one. You are that eternal divine person, the original unborn primeval Lord. So here Arjuna is like espousing this kind of poetic expressions of glorification to Krishna, because he heard so much from Krishna that he's like filled with juice and realization. He's getting all this realization. He's this glorifying Krishna out of love, out of his pure love. And then he says that the rishis have said this about you, that this, right? And you have said, you yourself has said this. You have previously said, ajo pisan avyayatma bhutanam ishvaro pisan. The Shrutis say that you are Divya beyond birth and death, and you have said So you say, the Shastra says, and also the Rishis, like Narada, Devala, and Asita, they also say, and I understand it in this way also. So Arjuna is making confirmation of this point. He said, this is my experience. This is what the sadhus say. The Shastra also says.